This is the Calm Living Blueprint Podcast, episode number 12. Hey, podcast listener. Even if you are feeling alone in your pursuit of calm and confidence, know that today, right now, in your earbuds, you are joined by thousands of others all around the globe seeking to do the same thing you are. At Calm Living, we believe it's only when we stop struggling against our fearfulness and our anxiety that we begin to find lasting freedom from it, to live the lives we want to live. That is what this podcast is about. Come join the confidence revolution. Well, hello. Welcome to episode 12 of the Calm Living Blueprint Podcast. I'm your host, Candace Esposito, the founder of Calm Living Blueprint. Thanks for downloading and listening to the podcast. In this episode, I'm going to try to answer a question that I get a lot from fellow podcast listeners and my Calm Living clients. And the question is, should I take medication for my anxiety or depression? If other people are asking, you might be wondering this too, so I'm happy to share my answer with you. Before I do, a quick reminder that the show notes for every episode are available on the Calm Living Blueprint website. The show notes include the actual MP3 recording, the transcript of the podcast, any resources mentioned, as well as the home play that I recommend in each episode. The show notes for today's episode can be found at calmlivingblueprint.com/12, and that's the number 12 as in episode number 12. Okay, first I need to say a quick legal disclaimer here. The views I'm sharing in this episode are my opinion and my opinion alone. This information is not intended as medical advice. Please consult with your doctor before starting or stopping any medication. Remember, I encourage you to not take what I say at face value. Ask yourself first if it resonates with you or not. Make choices based on what is right for you. I think we're all a little biased because of our personal experiences. I include myself in that as well. I'm a naturopathic doctor, and I chose this field as opposed to conventional medicine for certain reasons, so take that into consideration too when listening. Okay, so should you take medication for social anxiety or generalized anxiety or depression? Unfortunately, there's no simple yes or no answer that I'm going to give you. If I were to offer you a simple yes or no answer, I would be doing you a disservice. Each person's situation is different. You have different factors affecting your choice to use medication or not compared to the next person. So how can you figure out what's right for you then? Well, I think the first step is to reframe the question that you're asking. Change the question from, should I take medication, to what do I want to get from taking medication? What am I looking to achieve? Basically, we're shifting from should to what. What effect or goal are you looking to get from taking medication? For what purpose are you considering medication? Because once you get clear on what you're looking to accomplish, the answer of whether or not medication is appropriate for you becomes more obvious. Now you may be thinking, well, I just want the medication to get rid of my social anxiety. Sure, that's fair, but let's break this down a little further. Now, what I'm about to say may seem like a tangent, but trust me, stick with me here because I'm confident this is going to help you answer that question. When it comes to therapeutic goals, the degree of healing that you're looking to achieve, there are 7 different levels. Okay, so picture a pyramid, and I'll include a diagram for you in the show notes. On that pyramid, the first level, the bottom part of the pyramid, the foundation, is to remove obstacles to health. Remove obstacles to health. And basically this involves helping your body by setting up the right environment, the right factors, so that it can heal itself. And you can do this by getting rid of anything that's stopping your body from doing that. So for example, that might involve drinking more water if dehydration is an obstacle. Cleaning up your diet if your unhealthy eating is an obstacle. Exercising if you are sedentary, and so on. Okay, so a poor diet, dehydration, a sedentary lifestyle, those are all examples of obstacles to healing. And any of those obstacles, plus many more, could apply to anxiety or depression. So the first therapeutic goal or level is to remove those obstacles to healing. The second step or level of the pyramid is to stimulate the body's natural healing abilities. So you've reestablished the foundation of health by getting rid of all the obstacles in the body's way, but now the body may need a bit further support to initiate healing. Sometimes the body has been held hostage by pain and pathology for so long that simply restoring that foundation, the first step of the pyramid, isn't enough. It needs a little encouragement to re-engage the healing response. And this level may involve therapies like acupuncture, water therapy, Tai Chi, meditation, prayer, EFT, homeopathy. There's all different kinds of therapies that could be used at this level. Again, like the first level, I think this level, the second level, always needs to be addressed when it comes to anxiety and depression. The third level in the pyramid is to strengthen weakened organ systems. Strengthen weakened organ systems. Air pollution may damage our lungs or respiratory system. Poor diet may damage our gut or gastrointestinal system. Drugs may damage our liver and kidneys or detoxification system. Okay, so the goal at this level is to rehabilitate those organ systems. Therapies at this level may involve herbs or supplements, you know, probiotics for the gut, fish oil for the heart, and so on. This level usually, not always, but usually needs to be addressed in anxiety and depression. There may be blood sugar imbalances, hormonal imbalances, detoxification issues, nutrient deficiencies, and so on. All of which are organ imbalances, and all of which can contribute to anxiety and depression. The fourth step is to correct structural integrity. Correct structural integrity. And this is about addressing any structural issues, spine misalignments, for example. And therapies at this level involve manipulation, like a chiropractic adjustment, craniosacral therapy, stretching, osteopathic medicine. Now, I see this level needing to be addressed less often when it comes to anxiety and depression, but something to consider nonetheless. The fifth step, the next level on the pyramid, is natural symptom control. Natural symptom control. This level is about using herbs, nutrients, and other natural supplements to reduce discomfort. It's about relieving symptoms, not curing. Okay, so to clarify, at this point the goal is not cure. The goal is symptom relief. A natural substance is used to get rid of symptoms. So for example, using white willow bark for joint pain. Another example may be using glycine for panic attacks. The glycine may help reduce the intensity of the panic attacks, but the likelihood is that it's not going to address the underlying root causes that triggered the panic attacks in the first place. So the goal at this level is suppression. You are using natural substances to suppress symptoms. The sixth level is synthetic symptom control. Synthetic symptom control. And you can probably guess what that means. Using pharmaceutical substances to reduce discomfort. Basically the same as the previous level, but this time we're using synthetic or man-made substances. Here the goal is to use drugs to suppress symptoms. If natural methods are unavailable or insufficient, synthetic drugs may be used. So for example, Paxil and Xanax are very common medications prescribed for anxiety and depression. And then lastly, the final step or level at the very top of the pyramid is high force invasive interventions. And these include therapies like surgery, chemotherapy, and radiation. And generally, these therapies are used as a last resort. And generally, this level does not apply to what we're talking about, so I'm just going to leave it there. Always give the patient what the patient needs. That's the ultimate goal. So what do you need? Ideally, you want to start at the bottom of the pyramid whenever possible, but really you could start at any level. So again, from bottom to top, we have remove obstacles to health, stimulate the body's natural healing ability, strengthen weakened organ systems, correct structural integrity, natural symptom control, synthetic symptom control, high-force invasive interventions. So circling back to the original question, what's the therapeutic effect you're after? What's the therapeutic effect you're after? If your symptoms are uncomfortable but bearable at this point, and you want to address the underlying causes of your anxiety or depression, you may wish to consider starting from levels 1, 2, or 3. If your symptoms are not bearable, if your top priority is relief, you may wish to consider starting at level 5 or 6. Take into account that natural therapies generally take a little time to act, so if you are in an urgent situation, level 6 pharmaceuticals will generally be a better option in that case. And there are no value judgments here. If you need medication, you need medication. That's okay. There's nothing to be ashamed about. Please be aware, however, that there are effective, alternative, natural options available before you reach that point. And perhaps I can cover those in another podcast episode if there's interest. Okay, so I hope that answers the question, should I take medication? Ask yourself, what therapeutic effect do I want to achieve? Then that will help determine what level you want to start treatment at and the type of treatment involved at that level. Okay, so now at this point, I'm just going to forewarn you that the rest of what I'm going to say in this episode could be viewed as more of a rant, but so be it. I think it's important information to get out there. Okay, but just consider yourself forewarned. My main concern with medication is when it's an automatic, when drugs are prescribed without any thought being put behind the prescription and without much conversation between doctor and patient beforehand. Now, of course, this doesn't apply to all doctors. There are good doctors who don't do this. So I'm going to try not to generalize, but in a moment I'm going to be presenting some statistics that makes it a little difficult not to. Now, there is no question that when absolutely needed, anti-anxiety and antidepressant medications can help calm dangerous situations and possibly take a patient out of harm's way. When used in this conservative way, they can save a life. But in many cases, this urgency is not present, and the prescription only increases risk to life. And even after an urgent situation has passed, many patients tend to remain on medications indefinitely because doctors are not sure how to help patients wean off them, and they're not sure how to prescribe non-pharmaceutical remedies and options for their patients. Consider this. 120 million people take psychiatric drugs, and that number continues to rise. $4.4 billion is spent on drug ads each year. Okay, and here's information that you're not going to see in any drug ad. 61,000 deaths, 19,000 birth defects, 25,000 suicides, and 550 homicides are attributed to psychiatric drugs every year. All the while, pharmaceutical companies rake in $88 billion per year on psychiatric drugs alone. Okay, so how about we push aside the marketing campaigns for a moment and look at some facts. In a 2012 study, researchers at McMaster University concluded that antidepressants generally do more harm than good. Generally do more harm than good. Wow, what a statement, eh? We have millions of North Americans, approximately 1 in every 10, depending on antidepressants and anxiolytics, under the guise these drugs make you feel better. So what actually are they doing and at what expense? The actual effect of the most commonly prescribed antidepressants and what are considered first-line therapy for social anxiety, the SSRIs, is not much. In fact, recent meta-analyses show that their effect is no better and possibly significantly worse than placebo. Up to a fifth of patients on SSRI antidepressants do worse than placebo, and there's no way to predict or identify who will do worse. SSRIs work by increasing levels of serotonin, the feel-good hormone in our brain. However, our brain doesn't hold the bulk of serotonin in our body. Our digestive tract, our reproductive system, and our developmental systems all depend on serotonin for proper function. This helps explain the potential side effects people experience while taking these drugs, developmental problems in infants, abnormal sperm development, sexual dysfunction, osteoporosis, liver toxicity, seizures, low blood pressure, urinary retention, suicidal tendencies, violent behavior, stillbirths, diabetes, and stroke in the elderly. And that doesn't even include the most common side effects, like agitation, insomnia, nausea, constipation, and dry mouth. Ever see those television ads for Cymbalta? The voiceover guy spends half the ad reading off potential side effects. You don't experience any side effects from a placebo. According to a report in the 2010 Canadian Journal of Psychiatry, people who use anti-anxiety medications have a 36% increased mortality risk. That means people using these drugs are almost 40% more likely to die than people who do not use them. The fact is, there has been a disappointing and dangerous shift from psychotherapy to psychopharmacology. The psychopharmacological industry is built upon false information and false claims. Results from 47 studies led to the approval of the first 6 antidepressants on the market. Now, you would expect that most of the subjects entering these studies would stay until the very end of the study, right? And if there were a lot of dropouts, people who did not stay until the very end, then the validity of the studies should be questioned, right? Well, only 4 of those 47 studies had 70% or more of its subjects make it to the end. 4 out of 47. Do the math. Can you trust those results? Another trick seen in studies funded by pharmaceutical companies is called a placebo washout. And a placebo washout is when subjects that respond well to a placebo are removed from the study. When more people respond to the placebo, it lessens the impact or significance of the percentage who responded to the drug. So of course the pharmaceutical companies can't have that. Another major concern with these studies is that they are not long-term studies. The longest of the 47 was 8 weeks. Therefore, these studies do not provide any information about potential adverse effects that can occur 6 months, a year, or 5 years down the line. The average person taking these medications is on them for years, not weeks. In fact, most people are wrongly told that they need to be on them for the rest of their life. Mental disorders are brain disorders. That's what we've been told. And it's that ideological, unproven claim that keeps psychopharma from collapsing. Your doctor may have told you something like this. You have a genetic, chemical brain imbalance that causes you to be depressed. You need to take this pill for the rest of your life to treat that chemical imbalance. And it's not just doctors. This chemical imbalance theory has become indoctrinated into our society. But antidepressants work differently than you have been led to believe. There's no scientific research that shows that abnormalities of the serotonin system cause depression. Some depressed people have high serotonin levels, while some happy people have low levels. The brain is far too complex for this overly simplistic explanation. The fact that drug treatments sometimes work does not prove this chemical imbalance theory either. These medications are psychoactive drugs like cannabis and alcohol. Just by their very nature, they make people feel different. They affect everyone, regardless of whether they have a so-called mental disease or not. These drugs work by producing drug-induced states which suppress or mask emotional problems. So here's what doctors should actually be telling patients. I have no idea what is going on in your brain, but you can take this pill to make you feel different and suppress your thoughts and feelings. People who are severely disturbed or distressed may welcome and need these effects, even for only a short time. But for the average person with mild to moderate depression or anxiety, if given this clearer picture, would drug treatment still be that appealing? Besides the physical side effects, I also find in my clinical experience that these drugs hinder long-term coping skills. Think about when you lift a heavy weight. When you lift a heavy weight, there's muscle tearing and growth that happens, which helps you the next time you lift that burden. Psychological difficulty and experience affords the same growth of your brain when you experience challenging times. And what I've noticed is that these drugs do not allow this learning to happen. And that's what the focus of the Calm Living Blueprint podcast is all about, helping you develop those muscles, so to speak. Now, that's not to say that if you're on medication, you can't do this, but it does make it more difficult. For example, I had one patient who was placed on anti-anxiety medication during a challenging time when her mother was passing away. A couple of years after this traumatic event, she came to see me because she wanted to discontinue the medication due to side effects. But every time she tried to stop, all those anxious feelings she thought were gone came flooding back and became as present as ever. I mean, just check out the site benzobuddies.org for further proof of the potential side effects and withdrawal effects of these medications. At some point, the grief, the anxiety that comes with trauma, with loss, just needs to be processed. We need to allow ourselves that. A pill isn't going to cut it. In 1951, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, the DSM, had identified about 151 mental health disorders. Today, it's at 374 and still growing. Spending too much time at the gym? You may have muscle dysmorphia. Spending too much time surfing the web? It might be internet addiction disorder. Do you shop too much? It could be compulsive shopping disorder. You get the idea. And every time a new mental disorder comes out, so does a new drug to treat it. Big Pharma designs drugs based on treating symptoms. Psychiatric drugs do not cure. This is a business model that allows Big Pharma to give a drug to a person for life. We've been trained to believe that if we are labeled with depression or anxiety, that's all we have. But I want to be really clear about this. Depression and anxiety are symptoms, not diseases. There are many factors that can lead to these symptoms. For example, low thyroid function can cause depression. Hypoglycemia or low blood sugar, combined with adrenal fatigue, can cause mood swings and anxiety. When your body is expressing symptoms like depression and anxiety, it's your body's way of telling you there is some organ function imbalance. There's something missing that it needs, or there's something there that is harming it. Toxicity is another factor that can lead to depression. When a neurotoxic chemical comes into the body, the chemical begins by killing cells in the nervous system. When you kill enough cells, it causes tissue damage, and that's when symptoms appear. So does it make sense then to address this toxicity by adding toxic drugs? Every single psychiatric drug damages the brain and nervous system. We're living in an age of pharmacological dependence. We depend on psychiatric drugs instead of looking for the underlying root causes of depression and anxiety. Given the dire side effects, it just does not make sense, in my opinion, to pummel patients with these drugs when they are not needed. The good news, however, is that at any one moment, you can take control of your health by becoming mindful and asking smart questions. So I hope the information I've presented in this podcast episode will help you do just that. Phew. Rant done. So if you enjoyed this episode and found the information beneficial, I encourage you to leave a rating and comment on iTunes. And if you didn't enjoy this episode or disagreed with any of the information, please leave a comment too. I'm all for opening up a discussion around this topic. Either way, thanks again for listening. Till next time, I'm Candace Esposito. Keep calm and carry on.